1320 WILS. With all the success you're seeing in Silicon Valley, my next guest says that a lot of it is just downright random. Antonio Garcia Martinez joins us, a former Facebook executive, a Twitter advisor, and the author of the brand new book, Chaos Monkeys, Obscene Fortune and Random Failure in Silicon Valley. Antonio, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Now, at what point did you join Facebook?
So I joined about 1 year before its IPO in 2011, following the sale of my company to Twitter.
Nice. 2011. So the company was it well along at that point? Or
I probably was about employee 2000 and change. So It was, which sounds big, but it was still kind of, it still felt like an early stage startup, relatively speaking.
I mean, you're there before the IPO, so do you get a bunch of shares, that kind of thing?
Well, every employee does. So being before the IPO doesn't really mean you got a lot more than anybody else. But I did get part of it.
And you sold your company to somebody else of that before then, you said?
Yeah. I had a small advertising company, and that actually went to a small company called Twitter, in fact.
Oh, no. Okay. You sold to Twitter. And So at that point, were you basically wealthy after the sale, or what was your situation then?
Oh, well, it's pretty complicated. I go into some of that detail in the book. Uh-huh. A lot of these early sales actually aren't quite the sort of windfall that they're made out to be. Often you get paid in shares that do what are called vesting, which means you only get them after a certain amount of time in the acquiring company.
Okay.
So really, I mean, there's a big number on the news piece that everyone talks about, but the reality is you might only be worth something on paper, and that was certainly the case for me. I had to spend several years at Facebook to actually realize, or Twitter, to realize that value.
Did you? But you eventually did realize the value, you're saying?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's a weird story, and it's kind of part of the fun of the book, but the entire company went to Twitter, and then I got the equivalent, what I would have gotten at Twitter, at Facebook instead, because there was sort of a bidding war. But yeah, no, I did end up realizing a good chunk of it. I mean, I was there for 2 years, a year before and after the IPO.
Gotcha. Three years at Facebook, you're saying. What led to you leaving Facebook?
Well, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but the story, you know, part of the story is that before, right around the time that I got there, Facebook hadn't really figured out how to make money. Mm-hmm. And you might, you know, some of your listeners might have noticed, like, ads have gotten a lot more maybe creepy or better than they used to be. And how a lot of that technology got created is sort of part of the story.
Oh, in terms of using people's personal information to target ads to them?
Right. I mean, yeah. If you go around and browse the internet and shop for whatever, and you go to Facebook and you see a lot of those products inside Facebook, I created that. And Chaos Monkeys actually is the story of how all that happened around 2012.
Are you basically a computer engineer by training? Or?
Sort of. I was originally a PhD student in physics, actually, and then I kind of bailed on the PhD, as many do, and then I went to Goldman, actually, which is the first chapter in the book. But I did code, but really my position at Facebook is what's called a product manager, which means you're sort of like the leader / product visionary for a certain chunk of Facebook's product.
I'm talking to Antonio Garcia Martinez. He's the author of this brand new book, Chaos Monkeys, Obscene Fortune and Random Failure in Silicon Valley. Well, when you say random failure, what do you mean?
it's good of you to mention that. I mean, I think one of the lessons to take away from the book is that Silicon Valley is often portrayed as a meritocracy, right? The smartest, the hardest working guy wins. The reality is that often luck, happenstance, being there first or being there last is often what determines the winner. In the case of Facebook, right, we look at it and we think, oh, it's been this sort of effortless, you know, ramp up to success. Mm-hmm. The reality is there was a lot of flailing and foundering going on and a lot of what do we do now? And I think that's one part of the Silicon Valley story that's not often told and that I wanted to tell with Chaos Monkeys.
Do you watch that show on HBO, Silicon Valley?
People ask me, it's funny, like I actually don't have cable. So I watch pirated scenes on YouTube, but beyond that, I've actually not watched entire episodes.
I was going to ask you how accurate it is. What is the Silicon Valley culture today, would you say? What are people really like there?
Well, I'd say what I've seen of the show, actually, it is very accurate. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit goofier in Silicon Valley and trying to make it funny when you're actually going through it. A lot of it actually isn't so funny, but I think it does capture it really well. I mean, what's the culture? You know, it used to be the sort of like technically, you know, the sort of technically talented hippie, a sort of Steve Jobs figure, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's become more and more a mainstay for, you know, the American elite and the American ambitious want to go. The sort of person who would graduate from an Ivy League school and go into McKinsey or Goldman or like finance or whatever, mm-hmm. actually end up in Silicon Valley. And so now it's like the standard sort of path. Yeah. From whatever, the Ivy League or whatever, is now Silicon Valley, and that's changed a lot.
Are you one of the rare lucky ones to have made a fortune for yourself, or is this rather common now?
I definitely think I'm lucky in some regards. I mean, I wouldn't, as I say in the book, it wasn't based on any sort of particular merit of mine. Mm-hmm. I think my little company was nothing in the scheme of things, but I think it was very typical. It existed for 10 months, and it sold on paper for $10 million to Twitter, right? I only realized part of that value, by the way. I mean, a relatively small fraction.
How big of a company was it when you sold it?
Oh, it was just the three founders and one contractor uh-huh. and five or six investors. And, I mean, that was it. That was literally it. And a product with no revenue.
How much convincing does it take to get Twitter to buy you for $10 million?
A fair bit. I mean, one can stretch this illusion too thinly, but it's kind of like a seduction process, right? You have to get them sort of interested. And at some point, the sort of romance has a life of its own. It kind of spins out of control, mm-hmm. which is what happened with Twitter. But it was really based on the fact that their head of deals used to read my blog, which was pretty popular at the time. And that's what literally got the whole blog, the whole ball rolling, was just they liked the blog.
Interesting.
And it went from there.
So is that a big part of it, just the personal connection you make that can close the deal for you?
Absolutely. I mean, people here use the term personal brand, right, unironically. And what that means is how you're perceived in the community and how valuable you are. Mm-hmm. And some of that brand building is stuff like blogging, and that actually adds real value and turns into a deal at the end of the day. Yeah.
The book, by the way, Chaos Monkeys, Antonio Garcia Martinez, the author. What are you doing now, Antonio?
Well, at this point, I'm just dealing with the book just came out last week, so it's creating a lot of fuss. My next plan really is to go sailing a little bit. I've been working nonstop, no weekend, 60-hour week mm-hmm. for the past 5-6 years. I think it's time to take a little bit of time off.
How old are you?
I'm older than most people in Valley. I'm 40.
40.
But,
That's a very young age. But essentially, would I be right to say that you're retired if you want to be?
Maybe not living in San Francisco, which has become the United States' most expensive city. Uh-huh. But I'm not in a hurry to find another job. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Did you not enjoy the work you were doing before you left, let's say, Facebook?
Oh, no, I think I did. I mean, I think one of the things a lot of Facebook employees enjoy about Facebook itself is the scale, right? You launch a product and literally hundreds of millions of people and potentially billions of dollars of money sort of move around and are impacted. Uh-huh. So I did enjoy that aspect of it. A lot of the politics, a lot of the grueling hours, a lot of the gnawing self-doubt, that wasn't so enjoyable. But, it's just one of those adventures with lots of highs and lots of lows.
Do you see Mark Zuckerberg around when you're there?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I, at least at the time, you know, Facebook had a pretty flat hierarchy. The book's opening scene is a meeting with Mark, actually, yeah. in which I'm pitching him on some of these targeting products we mentioned early on.
And pitching Mark? What was that experience like?
Oh, it was a little bit nerve-wracking. He asked very direct questions. He expressed direct answers. He's not terribly interested in ads. I mean, he deals with it because he has to. But it's really Cheryl that I really work a lot with a lot more. And she was a lot more involved in a lot of the story than Mark actually was.
So for the young people, and you yourself are young, but for those that continue at it when they've already made a fortune, what's driving them, would you say?
I don't think it's so true of me. But I think many other people just want to have an impact. I mean, they see technology not as a consumer of it, like I think most people do, just a thing that you buy mm-hmm. or that you consume, but as a thing that you create. And that just makes it a very different deal. You look at the world and you think there's something missing, right?
Yeah.
And you want to create that thing. And I think that's the drive that keeps people working beyond what they even financially need.
So if you're in your late 30s or 40 now and you're in Silicon Valley, how connected do you feel to the 20-somethings there?
You know, it's a good question. People my age who I guess are, I don't know, what are we, Gen X, Gen Y? I'm not even sure what we are. I guess I'm officially on the cusp. I guess I miss millennials by 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We look at millennials a lot, or particularly an app like Snapchat that seems like this ultimate deconstruction of the social media experience into like nothingness. I'm a little bit quizzical sometimes. But I guess I think the big distinguisher is that younger generation has never known a world that didn't have ubiquitous computing and smartphones everywhere. Well, I'm old enough to remember like paper card catalogs and libraries, right?
Now, is that a problem for them, do you think? Is there any drawback for their life?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, aside from the fact that I feel a little entitled about it, I think often some of the older generation actually views it with a lot more wonder because they sort of don't take it for granted. They remember a world in which it didn't have it. And I think the current generation just assumes that phones always work and everything, all of human knowledge is always available at your fingertips. And that definitely wasn't the case.
Yeah. Is there now, right now in Silicon Valley, is there still a feeling of a boom happening? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, sure. Mm-hmm. I was just reading the average one-bedroom price in San Francisco, ready for average, totally average, is $3,400 a month, and so, which is officially higher than New York. So San Francisco is actually now the most expensive city in the United States to live in. The boom is definitely still happening.
You live in San Fran yourself?
So actually, as it's mentioned in the book's bio, I live on a sailboat, and the boat's actually docked in what's called East Bay, which is sort of like where Oakland and some other cities are across the bridge. Hmm. So I don't quite live in the middle of it, but I do dip my toe into it.
That's incredible. And you have Wi-Fi on the boat and everything else, huh?
Well, my marina is particularly civilized, so it does. In general, you don't. And in fact, frankly, I think it's a good thing. But yeah, you know, the boat thing, everyone remarks on that, and it's really not quite as romantic as it sounds, I'll assure you.
Where are you going to sail first, then? What's your first destination?
Yeah, no, good question. Well, we're here on the West Coast, right? And the way the winds go, Hawaii is the next stop. So I think if it was just Hawaii would be the sort of less ambitious goal, and I think something like crossing all the way to the South Pacific would be the more ambitious goal.
Wow. Antonio Garcia Martinez, the brand new book, just out literally, Chaos Monkeys, Obscene Fortune and Random Failure in Silicon Valley. Antonio, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.